This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. In this week's program, violations, abuse, and chaos intensify in Libya, a UN report finds. And development in South Sudan hinges on the country being at peace. But first, the people of South Sudan have been betrayed by renewed fighting after ending decades of civil war, according to the UN Secretary General. In an effort to give a boost to the peace process, Ban Ki-moon traveled to the capital Juba on Thursday, the last and final leg of his African tour. Jocelyn Sambira has the story.
Nearly a week after clashes in a UN civilian protection site in Malakal left 7 dead and at least 40 injured, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon touched down in the capital city of Juba. This is his fourth visit to South Sudan. He was accompanied by 3 UN heavyweights, the peacekeeping chief, the head of humanitarian affairs, and a senior human rights official. Recurring intercommunal violence in various UN protection sites in South Sudan of late has resulted in serious casualties and even deaths. Ban Ki-moon has warned that attacks on civilians or peacekeepers inside UN premises may constitute a war crime. Expectations were high amongst the displaced populations.
Of course, as a citizen, we are tired of what had happened. And we expect his visit that he pressurized the two groups, the two parties, so that they make sure that the August peace agreement is implemented as it was signed.
The Secretary General held discussions with representatives of the UN Protection of Civilian Sites to hear their views on what he described as a senseless conflict. Prior to this, he met with South Sudan's President Salva Kiir. A peace deal was brokered in August by the regional development body, IGAD, between South Sudan's government and opposition leader Riek Machar after 2 years of conflict. Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin shared the gist of their discussions.
He's coming here to push forward the peace process that has been signed, the IGAD peace process, and the president assured him of his commitment to implement this agreement. Secondly, the Secretary General also assured His Excellency the President, that he will urge Riek Machar to come as soon as possible so that the government, the transitional government of national unity, can be formed. And I think that is important. They also touch on the humanitarian issues, in which the President assured the Secretary General that all the humanitarian agencies are all being given free access to deliver food in all the areas of South Sudan that need relief.
UN Chief Ban Ki-moon also spoke on the phone to opposition leader Riek Machar, who is currently expected to return to the country to form a transitional unity government with President Salva Kiir. Speaking to the press before his departure, Mr. Ban recalled how in 2011 he was in Juba to see the flag of the new South Sudan fly highly and proudly. He said,
"I saw in the faces of the people of this country all that the flag represented, the pride, the spirit, the hope. And yet, tragically, that hope has been betrayed. It has been betrayed by those who put power and the profit over people."
2 million people have been forced from their homes since 2013, when the renewed fighting broke out between government and Riek Machar's forces. Some 200,000 people are being protected in UN camps. It's hoped that the visit will help the peace process move forward. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
Libya is in the grip of widespread human rights violations that may amount to war crimes amid a dramatically worsening situation for people there. The findings come in a report by the UN Human Rights Office, OHCHR, which highlights that all warring parties bear responsibility. The report calls for the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to be given more resources to investigate and prosecute those responsible for atrocities in the North African state. Daniel Johnson spoke to OHCHR's Gurdip Sangha to learn what the investigators found in their report.
I think this report really illustrates the magnitude and the widespread nature of the violations and abuses taking place in Libya. The report covers the period from 2014, and it really reflects upon an increase in violence since then and a worsening human rights situation since then as well. And it really documents the accounts of some of those who are bearing the brunt of this, including migrants, women, internally displaced persons, children.
Give us a bit more detail on the kind of abuses that are being delivered on children.
The report reflects upon the violations which have been perpetrated against children, including sexual abuse. And it also refers to and addresses the recruitment of children and the use of children in hostilities by groups pledging allegiance to ISIL.
And talking of ISIL, it's not just the extremist groups who are accountable and responsible for these abuses, it's all sides to the conflict. And it does sound like a completely lawless state.
The report details violations and abuses by all parties, both state and non-state actors. And indeed, it goes into quite some detail as to the situation of the justice system, which indeed is in a state of collapse in many parts of the country as a result of prosecutors and judges being killed, abducted, threatened. As an illustration, to our knowledge, there's not been a single prosecution of an armed group leader or very limited investigations. So that really illustrates the situation and the fact that the justice system does not have the capacity to investigate or prosecute the sheer magnitude of violations and abuses taking place.
Could you perhaps give us a detail on the kind of scale of this investigation, how many people you spoke to, and what you hope will happen, because you have identified war crimes, but crimes against humanity will take a much bigger burden of proof?
Indeed, the team spoke to about 200 victims and witnesses and another 50 interlocutors. In terms of what the report and what the office is recommending, it's recommending a number of recommendations which fundamentally refer to ensuring accountability and the re-establishment of the justice sector within Libya, including for the international community to support the International Criminal Court to investigate alleged crimes under international law.
We return to South Sudan, where the absence of peace is having a severe impact on people's ability to access food, health services, and other sectors. That's according to People, Peace, Prosperity, the first human development report for the country launched by the UN Development Programme, UNDP. I spoke to Eugene Owusu, Deputy Special Representative of the UN Secretary General and UN Resident and Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan.
South Sudan, unfortunately, has been characterized by conflict since the year 2013. The consequences of the conflict has been that there are severe challenges to human development in South Sudan. And some of those challenges revolve around food insecurity. The decimation of social service delivery has had a severe impact on health and social service indicators. We do have challenges to do with physical insecurity. Then also, unfortunately, we're going through an important and a major economic crisis. The consequence of all these is that presently South Sudan's human development indices are not the most favorable.
The report is entitled People, Peace and Prosperity. What will be needed to help South Sudan realize these three objectives?
I think there are two key actions that indeed South Sudan certainly needs to take. First and foremost is really the imperative of peace. Peace is central to whatever one does in terms of human endeavor. So the first important thing that South Sudan needs to do is truly maximize its political will to fully implement the current peace agreement. But implementation of the peace agreement on its own, while necessary, might not be sufficient. And the second important thing that South Sudan needs to do is to really demonstrate a very strong commitment to policy and structural reforms which are necessary to really turn around the fortunes of the economy and place South Sudan on a positive development trajectory.
Is there any good news coming out of the report, or have there been any interesting findings?
Oh, absolutely. This report that we've launched today is really about hope and optimism for the world's youngest nation. It is clear from the messages coming from the report and also the interactive dialogue that indeed we had as part of the launching of the report. It's very clear that South Sudan can turn its fortunes around. But as I said earlier, this will require fully implementing the peace agreement and indeed showing a strong political will to policy and structural reform.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.